supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, tanned, rested, and ready after my nice little summer vacation to get back to taking your fascinating phone calls. We also have a brand new question of the week. Would it ever be all right to release snakes in your garden to control an infestation of rats? That's a lovely premise now, isn't it? Let's get right to those fascinating phone calls before that epic battle. But first, let's start with some of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Mike. Where are you, man?
I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Very good. Did you have a nice, warm summer to, like, lay you low for your freezing cold winter?
We had a few days of warmth, but a lot of rain, a lot of cold. It always changes. So I've got a question for you about my blueberry plants. I've been gifted two bushes. One is, I think it's Brigida, and the other is a Jersey, and they're beautiful. I've never grown blueberries before, and as you know, it gets really cold here. For the winter, they're probably going to want to be in the ground, but the only area in my yard that gets enough sun for them to really thrive, it's not going to be clear and ready for them for at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I put them in some pretty large pots, like 10-gallon containers, and I'm hoping that if I get that filled with the right mix and just for winter bury them in the pots that they'll survive, and then they can hang out in the nice, relatively nice weather the rest of the year until that spot is ready, and then I can just take them out and put them in the ground permanently.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
Yes, you have everything pretty much figured out. Blueberries are among the cold, hardiest things that we can grow. For instance, I don't think there'd be any difficulty in me keeping blueberries alive in one of my giant containers, one of my half whiskey barrels, through my Pennsylvania winter. But, of course, we don't get the minus things before the Fahrenheit numbers down here in the deep south, do you? But as long as those containers are buried in the ground up to the soil line, it really doesn't matter where they are. Now, did the blueberries flower and bear fruit for you over the summer?
When I was given them, they had just started to berry, and they're fairly young. So I got a handful of berries, and they seem to do all right. My question now is, I put them in the containers, and they, you know, they had the little bit of whatever that was around the root in the tiny pot from the grower. But I put in about half peat moss, half composted plant material, and maybe 10% of old pine needles, and then just a little sprinkling of a certified organic soil acidifier on top just to make sure what was going to be there was acidic enough. And the plant is just starting to change. One of them is starting to change color. It's getting some red through the leaves, and it's yellowing a bit and even turning a little brown. I didn't know if that was just from the shock of having it transplanted at all, or if I over-acidified it, or did something else to shock it.
I tell you, I can't imagine over-acidifying a blueberry plant. It seems like you did the right thing. I'm not sure about the pine needles. They're kind of inert, as you knew when you handled them. They're kind of waxy. But yeah, my basic soil mix for blueberries is half peat moss, half compost, and maybe some perlite mixed in for good measure. They should be turning red. Blueberries have some of the most beautiful fall color around. Yellow is often a sign, however, that a plant is not getting acid enough soil. That's what happens to, I know my azaleas turn yellow in an instant if the pH creeps up. So what's your organic soil acidifier? Is it Holytone?
No, I think it's an Espoma product.
Yeah, that would be Holytone generally.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just a little bit of a powder, hardly more than a couple tablespoons for each container.
Yeah, I would say lean into it. If you see yellow, obviously you can buy a test strip or you can buy a little testing kit and test the pH. You want it to be down around 5. even a little lower wouldn't be bad. So if you test it and it's around 6, more peat moss and more of the soil acidifier, you can't go wrong there. And then I tell you, when spring arrives and they start to green up again, you know, hit them with more peat moss and more of that natural soil acidifier. And you say you've got them in 10-gallon pots. I tell you, if you want to take your time getting that new spot ready, as long as you can move these pots into the sun, they'd be fine growing in the pots over spring, summer, and another fall. You could actually...
Oh, good.
Matter of fact, as long as you kept dropping the pots into the ground over winter, they could be container plants for 5 or 6 years before they would outgrow those pots.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I hope to get them in the ground sooner than that, but that's good to know. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Love the show.
Good luck. Great question. Thank you. You probably saved many people's plants.
Hope so. Take care.
You too. 1-888-346-9499. Alona, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing good. Did I get your name correct?
It's actually Alana, but you can say it however you want.
I will say Alana. And how is Alana?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm down in Oklahoma City.
What can we do for Alana in Oklahoma City?
Well, I'm having some problems with my hydrangeas. They're a little bit droopy, and I just really want to save them if thought possible.
Well, droopy kind of can describe hydrangeas. Did they flower for you this year?
Yeah, they did. I got a lot of flowers, but they're just looking a little sad and a little droopy and not happy at all.
Okay, so when did you plant them?
I planted them in the spring, probably in end of March or in April.
Okay. How much sun are they getting?
They're getting morning sun, and they're in the shade in the afternoon.
Okay, about what time?
Probably 12:30.
It's not ideal. They would probably like a little more sun than that, even in Oklahoma City. Are they mulched?
Barely. I didn't know you weren't supposed to, and so I used the last 2 bags. It's an inch, maybe, of mulch. But I did mix in cotton burr compost and then some yard waste, I guess, compost from the organic store that I got when I planted them.
Excellent. It is a little high nitrogen, though, as I recall, so it might not be the best for flowering plants like your hydrangeas. The yard waste compost you get from an organic garden center would be fabulous. And what is the mulch? Is it regular wood chips? Is it dyed something?
Yeah, it's just brown wood chip mulch. But I did actually got my soil tested before I planted the hydrangeas.
Right.
And my pH was 7.1. And the only thing they recommended was 46.
Oh, my
zero,
God.
Zero.
Oh, my God.
But I could only find 36.
Oh,
zero,
my
zero.
God. I have no idea why Extension Services still recommend these high nitrogen fertilizers, again, especially for flowering plants. And again, especially in Oklahoma, your soil tested out nicely close to neutral. That's very good. But as you know, most Oklahoma soils and even some of the water is alkaline. And in a traditionally dry environment like yours, you don't want to put those chemical salts into your soil. So no more of that. And you did too much, which is a typical first-time gardener's mistake. Really, what you need to do when you plant new trees or shrubs is dig a wide hole, not a deep one. Make sure the plants aren't buried too deeply. Water them really well after they get installed, if they're not going to get rain. But then leave the bad thing alone. Don't pick at it. Don't keep feeding it or putting mulches down or anything like that. These plants have survived untold millennia without us. Now, I don't know if you have a lot of experience with hydrangeas. They don't look good over the winter. And there is always the tendency to prune them. And with hydrangeas, it's very hard to tell whether they're going to bloom on old wood or new wood. And we're now in the season of no pruning. Any pruning now can stimulate new growth. That growth would be weak over the winter. So just leave them be. And then in the spring, the even harder thing is just leave them be. Wait till they green up. Wait till they form their flower buds. And then you can go in and remove any old branches that are woody and dead, or even lively branches that are getting in the way of the flowers. But don't add anything more to your soil Water them deeply if we get a drought. If we go like a week without water, these are still new plants. So water them just by letting a hose drip at the base of the plant, literally for a couple of hours in the morning.
Okay, so right now I'm watering them with a soaker hose 30
Great.
Minutes a day. Is that
no.
enough?
Or no, no, no. That's more? Why they're drooping.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the murderer always reveals himself at the end of the phone call. Yeah, you're not letting the roots dry out. Everybody knows that plants need water, but it's even more important for them to dry out between waterings. So your new regimen will be 3 hours when you don't get rain, but only once a week. Let those roots dry out in between. There's probably a little bit of root rot down there. So now I want you to pull all the mulch away until it's no deeper than 1 inch anywhere around the plants. Let them dry out a little bit.
Okay, will do.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear live and in person at the Ludington Library in Lower Merion on Wednesday evening, October 4th, and at the Lower Makefield Township Building on Saturday, October 28th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and our very own late summer blockbuster, Snakes vs. Rats. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to an all-new You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hard-working hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I am tanned, rested, and ready back from vacation to take lots of your fabulous phone calls and bring you a great new question of the week. Should you release snakes into a rat-infested garden and let nature perhaps take its course? We'll tell you the surprising answer to that question after some of those fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Rob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I am just ducky today, Rob. How are you, sir?
Peachy, thank you.
Ducky and peachy. I think we got knacked. I can see it now. I'll carry an umbrella. You'll sing a song. Where is Rob Peachy?
Rob is peachy in Newark, Delaware.
Newark, Delaware. I know you're not Newark.
That's correct.
You are the Newark, because no one needed a better one. The old one sprang a leak. What can we do for Rob in Newark?
Well, every year is a little bit different in the garden for me. And this year, with the season the way it was, I'm not sure if it's related to that or just my changes in my constitution of the garden. What I'm driving at is I haven't had to spray any BT, BTI, meat oil, or any of that on any of my garden this year.
So you're saying you haven't had any pest problems?
Right. It's been next to nothing. I normally have caterpillars or leaf cutters on my roses, things like that. I think I knocked about 4 Japanese beetles off my roses. Otherwise, my vegetables aren't being inundated or anything this year. I'm just amazed. I'm not sure if it's the changes in what I put in my garden or whether it's just the weather that's created this.
Well, I will tell you that I have experienced a similar situation in my rural Pennsylvania garden. I generally don't have a lot of caterpillar problems. I attract a lot of meat-eating birds over winter. I feed them suet, and they nest all over my property. And then I stop feeding them suet, and they eat pests. And one of the prime pests that birds eat is caterpillars. Being at our house at dawn or dusk is like a riot. It's like drunken choruses battling each other. You know, there's hundreds of birds singing all at once. And I also don't freak out if a hornet builds its nest somewhere near the house or anywhere near the garden. You know, they can be troublesome to people, but hornets are incredible predators of caterpillar pests. So sometimes having a lively garden, your friends, your beneficials can take down the pests before you ever notice them.
Yes, I've noticed the same. I think with me, the only difference, I put some hops in. I'm a home brewer. I put some hops in, and the birds seem to hang out around the hop vines, and so I see them eating a lot of insects and so forth also. So that may be part of it.
Oh, that's very interesting. So this was a good year for your hops because it really wasn't very humid. How are you doing with them?
They're growing fairly well. They're all producing. This is only the second year of growing.
Right.
So they're not mature yet. But one of the plants is making nice enough cones that I might be able to use it in my brewing. But the other ones are still a little bit immature. But they're growing really well. They're nice and bushy, nice and tall.
Friends of mine at the Weyerbacher Brewing Company started a hop farm with a tiny bit of help from me and rewarded me with a case of their hoppiest beer. I think it was Hop Infusion, made just with fresh green hops, not dried ones. And, oh, baby doll, if you're a hophead, there is just nothing like it. And, you know, they're a natural sleep aid. They're a natural medicine. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've also experienced they're great shading plants. I mean, they can grow massive in size over the course of a season, and, you know, they'll die back, but the roots will survive.
Yes, yes.
But it's great that the plants have attracted lots of birds, and yes, birds alone could make the difference in your pest population. Some of the best gardening knowledge, some of the best new knowledge comes from books that are 100 years old, and a lot of my contemporaries and I like to read like 19th century farming books, and all of them will have a chapter on attracting the farmer's friend. Having birds nest on your farm to eat insects for you. They are great predators. Birds like chickadees, woodpeckers, nutthatch, they're all totally carnivorous. And then even the seed-eating birds eat insects in the spring when they need extra protein to mate and raise their young and have healthy eggs. So having birds on your property can often just eliminate pest problems. The livelier your garden, the more fun you're going to have in it.
Well, it's been pretty lively this year.
Well, congratulations, Rob, and I'll be looking forward to my growler of of Newark hoppy beer.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan.
All right, Rob. Continued good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
You too. 1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I am just Ducky, Karen. How are you?
I'm great.
And where is Karen great?
I am in LaFontaine. Well, really, it's LaFountain, but it's spelled like LaFontaine, Indiana.
Oh, okay. That's a very poetic. I love that name. What can we do for Karen in LaFontaine?
Well, it's LaFountain. Sorry.
Oh, excuse me. I was following your lead. I was trying to be fancy.
It's spelled like LaFontaine, but we say LaFountain. So I had a forester out. I have 19 acres of woods, and along the electrical lines, which is a fence row, because I was out of electricity because a huge branch fell and wanted to know what to let them cut and not cut because they're healthy or unhealthy. In that process, he pointed out these bush honeysuckles that I never knew about, and they're invasive, and talked about trying to get my woods healthy after having been a pasture. He said these bush honeysuckles rob the floor of very nutritious food, and it kind of takes over.
Sounds like somebody looking for work to me.
Well, he suggested that I spray them with Roundup, but I wait until November, December, because when everything else has died off, they're still green or maybe turning yellow, and they'll absorb the Roundup.
This is some of the worst advice. I mean, first of all, we don't need to be killing amphibians. We don't need to be killing frogs and toads and exposing ourselves to chemicals that most nations of the world feel are carcinogenic. And secondly, you're never going to control honeysuckle in a large wooded area. The honeysuckle is not stealing nutrients from the trees. Trees are the bullies of the schoolyard out in the woods. Because their canopy reaches high above everything else, they get all the nutrition. When they drop their leaves, the deciduous trees, in the fall, they smother all the smaller plants on the forest floor. And then, of course, they get first crack at the nutrients that are released when earthworms and other creatures chew up those leaves and poop out plant food. The honeysuckle is getting second take. Now, the honeysuckle, although, yes, it's an invasive species, it's not native, people need to get over themselves when it comes to this. The honeysuckle, if you have that much of it, you had that beautiful scent wafting through your property this summer, right? You smelled the honeysuckle.
Okay.
unless you had a cold all summer long.
Well, I didn't know that's what I was smelling.
And honeysuckle, although not native, does produce amazing amounts of pollen and nectar that bees and pollinators and butterflies and many other insects are drawn to. The whole concept of a non-native plant now is starting to get almost unworkable. The distances between countries have shrunk. Almost every plant on the planet now appears everywhere else on the planet. I would do nothing. I presume he's talking about Japanese honeysuckle, which is a vine, not a shrub. But even if you were going to use herbicides, which I would always pray people don't do, whether it's an organic herbicide or a chemical herbicide, it's only really going to have effect while the plant is alive and vital. It's a waste of time to spray herbicides on dormant plants. And matter of fact, when you do, then there's more runoff, then more of it's getting into the groundwater and more of it is around to affect non-target species. So my advice here is don't go looking for trouble. But yes, if you have trees and power lines that are intermingling their space, you know, that becomes a real issue. You either need to move the line or you need an arborist to come out and keep those trees away from the lines.
Well, I never liked the idea of using Roundup because I try to be organic in every way.
It's totally useless. There is no situation that calls for it. None whatsoever. None on the planet.
Well, will it let other trees grow? Because, I mean, will the little trees sprout up? Because it's these big old trees and they're not very many middle-sized trees because it was pastured.
The little trees will grow up when the big trees fall and die.
Okay.
As a tree enters old age, it's going to drop a lot of seed. And then when that tree falls, it's going to provide incredible nutrients for the biodiversity of the woods And then, yes, slowly a lot of those saplings are going to survive and they're going to become the new round of trees. Honeysuckle is not going to prevent anything from coming up.
Okay. Thank you. Love your show.
All right. You take care. Good luck to you now.
Okay. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. David, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How's it going, Mike?
I am just ducky today. Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, sir.
And where is Dave doing all right?
I'm doing all right in eastern Pennsylvania.
Whoa, the new hot corner of the Lehigh Valley.
Apparently so.
Yeah, all of a sudden, man, you are surrounded, inundated with great restaurants and things to do. Easton, you know, it's so funny to say that Easton is happening, but it's hot right now. Do you go to the farmer's market, theoretically the oldest farmer's market in America?
The oldest contiguous operating farmers market in America, and pretty often, yeah.
All right. What can we do for David in Easton?
Well, I had a question regarding mulberries.
Mm-hmm.
So we just bought a house recently, and it came with a mulberry tree of no particular distinction. Tree is a stretch. It's a little scrubby thing of about a foot and 2 feet, 3 feet tall. But mulberry trees are pretty big when they get to full size, and this tree is only located about 10 feet off the front of my building. So I really don't want a large tree that close because of roots growing into the cellar, because of lovely old rubble stone foundations and stuff like that. So I was wondering, is there any way to force it small, and is cordoning an option?
What the hell is cordoning?
Well, I was reading on this because I was looking at other things. I think I was looking at currants, actually. It's just another option for something.
Right.
Like fruiting things. And I thought, oh, you can do cordoning and, like, force it to have one stem and grow only, like, 4 or 5 feet tall. And, yeah, you're not letting the tree grow to its full extent. But if you have a small space and a small garden, you can force it in this fashion to stay tiny and produce enough for you and your household.
It sounds like a fancy way of describing pruning.
Yeah.
Okay, so mulberries are an Asian plant. You're right. They're kind of shrubby. They're kind of tree-like. Every mulberry is a little different. Different plants will produce different color fruits. The flavor of the fruits on every plant are remarkably different. We used to think that, you know, black mulberries were the tastiest or something like this. But sometimes you'll get a white mulberry that'll be delicious, a red mulberry that'll be delicious, a black one that just doesn't have that flavor. So when you have a tree that produces tasty fruits, you've already won part of the game.
Right.
The honest answer, I think you're correct to not want its roots to get under the house, because it does send up adventurous roots. It'll actually send up new mulberry plants if you let it go long enough. It'll send up new trees next to itself. If you're going to leave it in the current spot, you might want to dig a kind of a trench and just put in some edging down there just to make sure the roots always go off in the direction away from your house. And yes, you can prune the heck out of this baby. You can cut it back. You know, normally the rule is never cut a plant back by more than a third. You can cut this thing back by half every winter if you want to. Theoretically, you could cut it back to a stump and it would regrow. People who consider them problem plants, which I don't because I have a mulberry in the woods near my house that produces amazingly delicious fruit, so I don't consider them a nuisance. But people who do often can't get rid of them. They'll cut it down and it'll keep coming back at them. So you don't have to worry about hurting it. You also might want to try taking some new branches, some new growth in the spring, and just taking them to other parts of your property, gently planting those new branches in the ground and keeping those areas watered. See if you can get new ones to grow up in a more convenient area.
Okay.
This is a plant that loves to grow. It's probably going to be one of the easiest to propagate, and it can take a hard pruning probably better than almost any other plant in your landscape.
Okay. There are a couple other mulberry trees in town that I normally glean from.
Mm-hmm.
A few are in city land, so no particular ownership there, so to speak. it would be possible to graft one of those onto this to get a more desirable berry. Since this one, I have no idea what it's going to put out. We actually lopped it flat, and it started coming up and leafing.
Yeah,
we bought the house over the winter.
Yeah, I told you, you can't kill these things. What I would do if you want to take cuttings from a plant in a public area is get a friend and borrow a lab coat and get yourself a clipboard. And just go out with somebody else, and every time they take a cutting in the spring, you'll make a little false notation on the clipboard. And then I wouldn't try to graft them onto the tree. I would try to just propagate them in other areas of your property. I expect it's going to be like fig trees. If you take a cutting in the spring, put it in fertile ground, and keep it watered, it'll become its own tree.
Okay. And the other one was, I know you mentioned mulberries are an Asian thing, and I knew the blacks and whites traditionally are, but I've heard that the red mulberry was a native plant to the United States, or at least the North American continent.
Yeah, there could be. A lot of plants were native here. They died off. They came back. You know, when you talk about native plants, the big argument for me is, when does the clock start? But, you know, mulberries have been around for a long time, and, you know, if the fruits are no good, get rid of them. If the fruits are good, treasure them.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, good luck, man.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'll see you at the farmer's market.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will deliver the keynote address at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanic Gardens in Pittsburgh during their annual Native Plant and Sustainability Conference on Saturday, October 14th. And I will host the Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families on Wednesday evening, November 15th, at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in the Germantown neighborhood of Philadelphia. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and our very own late summer blockbuster, Snakes vs. Rats. I'm Ratty Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to this week's exciting question of the week, our own late summer blockbuster, Snakes versus Rats, who will win in the garden? Before we unscreen that epic, however, more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Tony, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Tony. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thanks.
And where is Tony well?
I am in State College, Pennsylvania.
Oh, where I had almost too good a time this spring. What a what a great reception I got from the listeners there. Did you get to any of my shows?
I did not, I'm afraid.
Oh, you missed a ball. What can we do for you now?
This year, I converted to raised beds. I got these great little corner cement blocks from Home Depot with a slat for 2x6 on four sides.
Right.
So you can make any configuration. And so I had some old plastic lumber. It's probably 10 years old, maybe 15, and about 2x6. And I put it in there, and I'm really happy with the raised beds. Very, mm-hmm. very happy. But I'm wondering if the plastic might be leaching any chemicals into the soil or whether there's anything I need to be aware of.
Well, plastic lumber is an interesting substance. There used to be a company named Obex, O-B-E-X, that made a product called Nova Wood that was incredible. I mean, it looked like lumber. It cut like lumber. You could screw or nail it like lumber. Mm. But it was actually 100% recycled plastics that had no other recycling use.
Mm.
This factory was taking non-coated plastics, the ones that didn't have the numbers on the bottom,
uh-huh.
and making this incredible lumber. I have one of their raised beds in my garden back in the day when I was editor of Organic Gardening magazine,
uh-huh.
which would uh-huh. be in the 90s, and I know
uh-huh.
that I actually used the bed on one of my Today Show appearances, so
uh-huh.
it's been in my garden for 25 years,
wow.
and as I worked with it, I realized because it was so strong and so firm that
mm-hmm.
I was not worried about chemicals leaching. Now, I was also assured that it was inert, but there is a really simple rule about plastics. You know, because people are using water bottles, sometimes they're letting the water bottle sit in the car in the sun, and you can tell when you taste that water that it's absorbed some chemicals. So you do have to be careful. But the more hard the plastic, the more inert it will be. The
uh-huh.
dangers of chemicals leaching come from the thinnest plastics and the most flexible plastics, the ones that are almost rubber-like. There was a big issue years ago about baby bottle nipples because they had to be a very flexible plastic. They were releasing their chemicals very easy.
Oh, boy.
So where did you get your plastic lumber?
I got it at this old mom and dad store called O.W. House.
Right.
Since gone out of business. And they sold meat, they sold lumber, they would, you know, electrical devices, whatever. Stores like that don't exist anymore. So, yeah, I got it there, and that Nova lumber kind of rings a bell, but I really have no idea.
What did you buy it for originally?
That's a good question. I don't know. Actually, of course I know what I bought it. I bought it to edge my garden. So my garden
okay.
was... you know, level, ground level, but I wanted to edge it to tell the weeds to get out, stay out.
Mm-hmm.
And they did pretty much.
Yes. First of all, I'm just going to say, without looking at it, without hearing anything else, I think it's perfectly safe to use. The dangers for me are the pressure-treated woods and old railroad ties, because chemicals were injected into those soft woods. And over time, the chemicals, of course, are going to come out because those woods rot no matter what they advertising says. The plastics are plastics. The chemicals in the plastic were pretty much rendered inert as the plastic was formed and hardened off. Plus, this is a great reuse for plastic. You know, we've got these giant floating, you know, garbage dumps out in the ocean that are mostly plastic. Once plastic is created, it's really hard to destroy it safely. So the answer is to keep reusing it. I think plastic lumber is a great solution for garden beds. Like I said, I'm very happy with my, I got a 4x4 made of that old Nova wood, and I absolutely love it. So I wouldn't worry about it a bit, and you're a smart man to move up to raised beds.
Thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Okay, next time I come to State College, you have to come out and see me.
All right.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Corrine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Corrine. How are you?
I am terrific.
And where is Corrine terrific?
Well, I am from Gorham, Maine, which is in southern Maine.
But is that where you are now?
No, right now I'm actually in Cape Cod.
Oh, okay.
On vacation with all the kids.
Excellent, excellent. What a great thing to be doing, catching the last of the summer. What can we do for you, Corrine?
Well, I'm 2 years into gardening. I've basically learned everything I know from you.
Thank you.
Hopefully. I think I already know what is causing my problem. My problem is blossom end rot in my tomatoes.
Okay.
And I know how to fix them for next year. I have failed as a tomato farmer and planted them in, dun-dun-dun, 5-gallon bucket.
Oh, God. So ugly, too. I mean, it's like, why don't you get some old toilets from the dump and put flowers in them as well, just to accentuate your double wide, you know?
So next year, the plan is to build some great raised beds in that full sun area. But I'm wondering if there's any way to rescue these puppies this year, because they're nice tomatoes, but as when they get to be about half size, they grow this big brown blob on the bottom.
Yeah.
And
blossom end rot is technically a calcium deficiency. That's why every spring, or actually every winter, I urge people to start saving up their eggshells if they eat eggs so that they can have the shells of a dozen eggs to drop into the planting hole of every tomato. With that access to calcium right around the root ball of the tomato is less sensitive to watering needs. So blossom end rot is kind of a calcium deficiency, but in one sense, the main reason is, quote, uneven watering, especially when the tomatoes don't dry out between waterings. I presume you had a very wet summer, like everybody else. One of the worst things about 5-gallon buckets is that no matter how many holes you drill in them, they really don't drain well. They're really not meant for this. That's why true containers, big flower pots, are the size and shape they are, flaring out at the top. It's really a better design for plants. But the basic answer is yes, you can try a Hail Mary pass right now. Did you do anything to add calcium to the soil?
No.
Okay.
I have just added seaweed liquid fertilizer, sort of a little bit more diluted than the bottle says.
Okay, yeah. Well, you want to cut back on any watering. You want these plants to really dry out. Right now, you got a shot at one more run of tomatoes. So I'm going to tell you, when you get back home, pull off every tomato that has brown on the bottom. There's nothing you can do to save a tomato once it gets started. The first thing I want you to do is get some really available source of calcium. You can buy liquid calcium in some really hipper independent garden stores. See if you can get liquid calcium. If you can't, get a bottle of Tums and crush them up with a hammer. and mix them, try to get them down near the root zone. Well, you want bioavailable calcium. You need the next run of tomatoes to get it. And then I want you to take a power drill and just drill holes in the sides of these containers towards the bottom like there's no tomorrow. It should really look more like a hardware cloth or a screen down there. Really let that excess water out. Try a shot of calcium. But yes, next year, if you build raised beds, make sure you start saving up eggshells or be prepared with some other form of calcium to put in the planting hole at planting time. And there's very few guaranteed things in gardening, but if you dry up your eggshells over the winter, save them, and you put the crushed up shells of a dozen eggs in the planting hole, it's virtually guaranteed that tomato will not get blossom end rot.
Awesome. Thank you. I really love your show. Your podcast is so great, so upbeat.
Oh, thank you.
So well produced. I really love it.
Thank you. I'll give tip of the hat to the producer, Alexis Landis, who you just made smile.
Do you are you going to come speak in New England at all?
I'll come any place they pay me, honey. Just tell them to email me and send a check.
All right. Have a great day, Mike. Thank
you. All right. You.
You
too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for the question of the week. A little ditty we are calling Snakes versus Rats in a California Garden. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, get us started with this week's oh-so-flowery question.
I'd be happy to. Mark in Sacramento writes, I have rats eating my plums and would love to have snakes in my garden that would eat the rats. Many snakes are indigenous to my area, rattlesnakes, garters, gopher snakes, and I have many wonderful blue-belly lizards in my garden, but unfortunately, no snakes. Would it be a good or bad idea to buy a garter or a gopher snake from a pet shop and let it go in the backyard? I'm only talking about snakes that are already indigenous to my local area. Thanks for any information you can give me.
Well, I actually have to thank Mark because his question led to my finding an amazing website, CaliforniaHerps.com, a guide to the amphibians and reptiles of California. It's the project not of a university or a doctored researcher, but a self-described herp nerd named Gary Nafis, and it answered all my questions about this topic and then some.
Okay, then my first question is, do snakes even eat rats?
It's a very short list of snakes. Garter snakes, for instance, are just way too small. Now, some snakes native to Mark's Northern California location are big enough, like the king snake, the gopher snake, the rubber boa, and yellow-bellied and striped racers. And Gary's site does list small rodents as being in those snakes' diets. But rats are not small rodents. My hunch is that they'd be the last prey even a big snake would go after. And Gary agrees, saying, quote, in the world of California reptiles, wild adult rats are too big and fierce to be killed by anything but the strike of a venomous rattlesnake.
You know that fierceness personally. You famously cornered a rat in your house when your kids were still babies and essentially killed it with your bare hands.
Yeah, right, which I don't recommend anybody else try, because I shook for days afterwards. They are almost impossibly muscular and powerful for their size. They're an ancient enemy of mankind.
Ugh. Are rats specifically listed as prey for any snakes indigenous to Northern California?
Just the aforementioned rattler.
Not a gopher snake? Gophers are about the same size as rats, aren't they?
Yes, and gophers are serious garden pests in the West. When my friend Jeff Cox first moved from rural Pennsylvania up to the wine country, he told me that he kept a feed sack and a device called a snake git in his car. When he would find a big snake sunning itself on a highway, gopher snakes can reach 9 feet long, he would try and collect it with his git and put it in the bag to later release it in the garden.
Was that legal?
Probably not. And while it might be legal to collect such a wild snake if you have a specific type of fishing license, it is definitely illegal to release it.
I imagine that herp nerd Gary really knows those regulations.
Yes, although he wisely points out that he does not want to be considered the last word on any legal advice. He began his answer by saying that it is obviously, quote, unethical and illegal to release non-native reptiles or amphibians.
Right. Florida is flooded with exotic creatures like South American boa constrictors and Burmese pythons that were foolishly released into the wild.
Ah, but Gary also considers the release of native species to be unethical and illegal, especially with our listener's pet store kicker. My first reaction to Mark's email was that you should never, ever release anything you got from a pet store into the wild. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, quote, native reptile captive propagation laws and regulations specifically forbids such releases, whether the snake was bred in captivity or even captured in the wild.
So no plums for poor Mark?
Oh, we hope to make Mark plum happy, just not with an introduced snake. If you see rats anywhere in your landscape, you must eradicate them quickly, directly, and efficiently. You don't want to introduce a snake in the hope that it'll get around to the rats after it eats all the easier prey. A much better response would be to deploy several of the relatively new battery-powered rat traps that electrocute their prey. The bait is contained inside the box-shaped trap, so there's much less chance of it hurting a non-target creature like a bird than an old-fashioned snap trap.
And whatever you do, don't use rat poison. A snake or raptor could eat the poisoned rat, and then you'd be overrun with all the vermin they would have controlled during their lifetime.
Right, and that would be hundreds, maybe thousands of mice and rats. Now, let's talk about Mark's, quote, blue belly lizards, which do have distinctive blue bellies, but are more commonly known as fence post lizards because they like to climb up high to sun themselves. They would be the first prey of a big snake, which would be tragic, as they are voracious predators of mosquitoes and grasshoppers. More importantly, and this is wild, when a tick carrying Lyme disease feeds on a fence post lizard, the Lyme disease inside the tick becomes deactivated.
So if that tick then bites you, you won't get sick?
That's exactly right. Researchers have even found a lower incidence of Lyme disease in areas with lots of these cute little lizards. How cool is that? Well, that sure was some interesting information about using snakes to run off rats. Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over with lots more info we didn't have room for on the air and more details on that Lyme disease-defying lizard, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to run rats into my raspberries if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, as long as you include your location, at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location, especially if you're certain we don't need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location and where you will find the answers to all those questions you were going to email us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our ratty theme song. Our engineer this week is Diana Martinez. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website vermin-free. No fan of snakes or rats, Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our rattled editor is Al Banks. Brett the Viking Raider claims to have chased every giant snake from our building. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. I'm going to run out right now and sell snakes versus rats to those people who make the Sharknado movies. And then I and my wheelbarrow full of cash will see you again next week. So here's the pitch, okay? Rats the size of an Escalade facing off against giant pythons that are crawling out of the sewers and subways of New York. I'll make a Stan Lee-style cameo in the movie. It'll be great. You're going to love it. What happens when caterpillars defoliate the same tree year after year? You get to go fishing! I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss the strange symbiosis of a sphinx moth and the catalpa tree.